And welcome back once again to the Endurance Hour podcast. We are now in the 200s, hitting episode 201 starting today. Hope everyone's doing well, had a good weekend. It is Monday, March 27th as I record this, back here in Spokane, Washington, where it's rainy and cloudy, but that's life. Just got back from a three-day Timex multi-sport team camp in Boulder, Colorado. Roger and I were there, Wendy was there, and 49 other members of the Timex multi-sport team were in attendance. What an honor and privilege to be a part of that team, and this year was extra special. In addition to being introduced to new products from not only Timex, but some of our other sponsors, we had some great speakers, and of course, I met some amazing athletes, some new members on the team. We're going to save kind of our Timex multi-sport team camp recap with me and Roger for probably our next episode. But in the meantime, I want to share with you some of the highlights and previews that you'll hear in the future. And a couple of them stand out to me, and that is on our awards dinner night, which was actually Saturday night. We get together as a group and dress up and have a nice dinner, and then we have presentations, and then we kind of give out awards. There's a Hall of Fame award. There's Performance of the Year award, like a breakout Performance of the Year award, male athlete, female athlete, and so on. Well, we had a couple of speakers, actually three big-name speakers for anyone who's a triathlon historian or follower of triathlon. Number one, Simon Whitfield. Simon Whitfield, the man who won the first ever gold medal in the 2000 Sydney Olympics in triathlon. He also won a silver medal. So a two-time medal-winning triathlete in the Olympics was there in front of us talking. And his guests, he brought two of his really good friends, Greg and Laura Bennett. So we have this 30-minute chat with these three who were just talking about optimal performance, excellence in sports, and some of their stories, and they have all great chemistry and camaraderie. So it was a really cool little discussion. That'll be coming up in a future episode, so we'll showcase that one later. We also had a 45-46 minute chat session with Alan Lim, Dr. Alan Lim with Scratch Labs. You heard him last year in the podcast, so if you go back 1 year ago this month, you'll hear Alan Lim talking to us about nutrition, hydration, sodium intake, and as it relates to performance, cramping. It's so much. It was a really great talk. So that one also is going to be on the podcast in the near future. So we got the Bennetts, we got Simon Whitfield, we got Alan Lim. And this episode here, I'm trying to get this done as quickly as possible so I can get it out to you, is actually a preview. We were in the vehicle. I don't know how much I want to give away to you. We were in the Uber vehicle on the way to the Denver airport to Boulder, and I had some athletes in the car, and I decided to turn on the microphone, turn on the recorder, and do a podcast in the car on the way to the Timex Multisport Team Camp. So that's what this episode is all about. I hope you enjoy it. And thank you very much. This podcast will end at the end of this in-car recording. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening and stay tuned. This is episode 201. Many more to come. Have a great one.
Are you listening? Damn.
Here we are with an Uber vehicle full of Timex athletes from all over the globe.
We're making a Dave sandwich.
We're a Dave sandwich here in the center. To my left is Emily Rockin' Kratz.
Kratz rhymes with brats.
And to my right is Caitlin Glenn.
Hello.
And behind me is Flicka.
Hi, guys.
And in the front is some guy named Roger, who I've been working with for a long time, but no one cares about him right now. So the adventure begins. I want to first, I got to hear your story. We're going to talk to everybody here. I want to hear your story of your 146-mile, 5-6-day marathon running event in Costa Rica. Go.
Okay, ready, go. And that was actually 6 days and 150 miles, Dave. Let's try to get our details correct.
I was told math would not be involved.
Oh, okay. Well, I rounded up. Well, where do I even start? Yes.
How do you hear about this race? What's it called, and why did you sign up?
Okay, it is called the Coastal Challenge, and I don't know why I signed up. I just thought it would be ridiculously crazy and fun, and I like that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I Googled it. That's how I found out about it. And then I just asked my coach if it would be cool, and because you know you need permission from Coach Man.
What did you Google to say, I want to go run 150 miles? What'd you do?
I think I put like endurance event or something. I did the Norseman last year.
You said, I'm bored. I want to do something crazy for 6 days.
Yeah, totally bored. And that's what kind of came up. And then I looked at it a little bit and I didn't even really know what I was getting into. But the pictures look cool and it said it was hard and I like that kind of stuff. So yeah, signed up and went there without knowing anybody. And feel free to insert any questions or commentary as I go along.
So you didn't know anybody, and right. It's a field of what, 60 athletes?
Well, there was two categories. So there was the expedition and then this other one that I can't remember the name. And so the expedition was the full blown, and then the other category was like half of that. So between the two of them, it was like under 100 people. And then there was other people that came along, like if they had spouses or friends that wanted to support or whatever. And then there was volunteers and stuff. So yeah, the whole caravan was probably a little over 100. But
so were you unsupported throughout the race? You brought your own food? I know there's aid stations.
Yep, there was like 4 aid stations maybe throughout the whole day. And then, but yeah, you had to bring your own food. I had like a camel back. And then had food with me. But some of like the ultra, like the good people that like do this, like know what they're doing, they had like the littlest little packs. Like, I don't even think they had anything with them. I don't know what they were doing. They were like, they probably did it so fast. They don't need to drink. I'm out there all day, so I need like 40 pounds of crap. And then I had like my camera and food and all that stuff with me. But there was a lot of river crossing, so you had to be careful. So you didn't like, because it would go, all of a sudden I would be like,
nothing says a race like a camera.
Yeah,
I brought my camera.
I wasn't racing, I was experiencing it and participating. And I brought my camera.
and your preparation for this 6 day, 150 mile workout endurance race was what?
Well, I did a long run of 1 hour and 50 minutes. Uh-huh. And didn't run
solid,
on trails.
Right, Roger? Solid.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. I didn't stop. So that was good. And then I didn't do any trail running at all. So I wore my trail shoes for the first time, you know, day one. You don't ever try anything on the first day, but I did that. So, but you're just going, like, right? It's just like getting through it. You just keep moving forward. It's fine.
And you said this was like averaged a marathon a day?
It did average out to be that, yeah. So our lowest day was about 19 to 20, and then our longest, we had 2 30-plus-mile days.
And what were your legs feeling like after day two?
How about after day one? Why don't we start there?
Go.
You know, I was sore, Dave. I was like Iron Man sore at the beginning of day two. Because, you know, it wasn't so much the running. It was the pounding of going up and down. Mm-hmm. So when you go down, that hurts your quads, mm-hmm. FYI. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I was sore. Like the first couple of miles of every day was just... I tripped twice because I couldn't pick my feet up. Yeah, that was fun.
Tell them about the checkpoints and the deadlines, because if you didn't make a certain point, you were out or you had to get demoted to the other wimpy group.
Yep, the wimpy group. If you didn't make it to a certain, usually it was like aid station 3 or 4 by a certain time, you couldn't, they would have to take you to the campsite or whatever because you wouldn't be able to finish in time with daylight.
Did you consider maybe... I'm not going to make it, and I'll go ahead and I can accept the other distance?
No, I don't accept that at all. That was not an option, and we were good. We made the cutoffs.
You say we. Who's we?
I ran with a girl, Courtney, who I met there, and we hung together, which was awesome because it's better to do stuff when you find somebody to do it with. Actually, there was people throughout the whole day that we kind of met and whatever. So Tuesday was the day we came the closest because we took a wrong turn and got lost, and it was super technical. The last 5 miles was along the beach, and because we got lost, we were later in the day, so with the tide, it made the sand soft, and there was no shade, and it was like 155. So we proceeded to walk that because we couldn't run it.
How'd you do nutritionally throughout this thing?
Oh, I did great. I don't really know if I did that great, but...
Because you're burning hella calories throughout all this.
I think so, yeah, right? Because you're never stopping. You know, it was... I just ate, and you weren't that hungry because it's so hot. It was like 100 degrees every day, I think. So you ate as much as you could at night and in the morning, and then during the day you just ate as much as you could. You could never eat as much as you were burning, that's for sure.
And you were saying that bananas, watermelon, and what else was on the course, because dehydration and feet issues were reasons why people would quit.
Yep. There was just the fruit, and then they trail mix too, and Gatorade at the rest stops. But keep in mind, it's probably, it can be up to 2 hours between, because they're far apart because it's so long. So you really had to make sure you had stuff with you. Otherwise, I never ran out of water. I'm kind of like a camel. I don't have to drink a whole lot, but...
What about bonking?
I did not bonk.
Actually,
Tuesday, that day I was telling you about, that our crazy day, we were out there like 11 hours. The last 2 miles was on a road, so we could actually run it, but we couldn't run. I couldn't run. I was done, and I was almost like you were drunk because I was so tired. But it was cool. It was fun.
And you stayed with this gal the whole time?
No. There were some parts where we weren't together. Wednesday, maybe, we got separated. But other than that, we were, more than not, yeah, we were together.
Did you ever go into this thinking you wanted to race it, or you just wanted to complete it? What was your goal? The experience of it all?
Yes, it was all about the experience. I was not going to be racing this thing. It was my first, I did a 50 miler actually a couple years ago. And then, so this was my real first time doing something like this. So I just wanted to go and see everything and take it all in and have fun and jump in the river if I felt like it. Yeah.
And did you train for the 50 miler?
No.
And you...
But I do. I think if you do long distance stuff, you have the endurance, so you can get through it. Like, it's not like it's...
Yeah, but the next day is going to be hell.
Yeah, it was kind of hellish. But that was because I wasn't used to the downhill. I think aerobically I was fine. Mm-hmm. And you're not running the whole time. You're hiking a lot. You're trying not to fall over a lot. So it wasn't too demanding aerobically. It was just more strength stuff. And I'm pretty huge, so...
How did this come?
Big girl.
Are you what? You're 5'3". You're 105. Wet. So how does this compare to the Norseman? I think we talked about this on the podcast before. Did we talk pre or post Norseman?
Did we talk Norseman? No. No. Just it was a lot different because Norseman is a 1 day event and you can be done. Right. This was like you're tired. You're sore the next morning. You got to go do it all over again.
Yeah.
And by the end of the week, I felt fine, though. Like, so much better than in the beginning of the week. So your body gets used to it. But the Norseman was totally cold. You know, you're doing three different events. You're swimming, you're biking, and then obviously the run. This was all running, hiking, so hot. So completely different. But it was still the no option of giving up type attitude you got to have.
Yes. Here, yes, question from the audience.
Okay, so... It seems like you race more so in the heat. Have you found that you prefer the heat versus the cold? Like, I imagine Norseman would have been tough for you because you're so tiny and you used to racing in the heat.
Yeah. And no body fat, so right. It'd be harder in the cold versus the heat.
Right. That's a really great question, Caitlin. Thanks for asking.
I was thinking about you all day.
We have another hand raised in the back just in case. So when you're done with this answer, we'll go to Flicka.
Okay, great. I love follow-ups. For Norseman, I thought the cold was going to be, or the swim was going to be the worst. So mentally, I was ready for it. It was not that bad. The worst was actually the bike because it rained. And so I got wet before I was able to put my jacket on and things like that. So for me, I don't like being cold, but it's avoidable if you can dress appropriately, right? Like, so then, but I was not able to do that on the bike so much at Norway because I was wet already before I saw my crew. So I like the heat better, but... the cold was, that was tough, but I made it. It was okay.
I'm thinking the heat must be good because you just got back from 70.3 Puerto Rico, where you were back-to-back overall amateur female finisher at that race 2 years in a row. So you've defended your title, and you've got the you've got your sunburns to prove it.
Yeah.
And is this something you'll go back to Puerto Rico?
You know, Dave, that's a year out. A lot can happen between now and then. So
you might find
another dog.
You might adopt another dog.
Oh, there's a doggy.
I had a rescue dog last fall. I guess if I get two, I'm not allowed to go to Puerto Rico. But I don't know. I really like it. I really like that race a lot. It's hot and just warm and beautiful and easy to get to. And so we'll see. Maybe.
And that race qualified you for Worlds, I assume.
It did. Yeah.
You took the slot?
I actually did. I didn't think I was going to, but I took it. Yeah.
What do you mean you didn't think you were going to take it?
Well, I qualified last year at Miami, too, and I didn't take it because I don't know, I just I haven't
been there, done that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it kind of aligns well with Kona. So I'm just going to do it. And I've never been to Chattanooga, and it'll be fun. As fun as worlds go.
So is this a bucket list, this adventure endurance race 6-day event, or is it...
No, I'll do more of them. I love it.
And will you train for the future
maybe,
races?
Maybe I'll even race it and not bring my camera. Roger. Get super more aero while I run for not having my camera on me. Right? All that extra weight holding me back. I loved it. It was so fun. And I want to do more of that.
Is it the destination combo, the event that draws you to it?
I think it's seeing a new place in a weird way. Or not a weird way, but like a different way, right? Like it's not something normal people go do and run through the jungle. And I think I was able to see things that most people can't because of it. I love meeting new people and learning about them and I love being active outside. So, and it was hard. And all three of those things were happening at one time, and it was awesome.
It seems like you're raising the bar on what you can do physically and how much, what else could you possibly do? The Tour de France? I mean, what do you want
to? They've asked me to compete in the Tour already. So yeah, it seems a little, you know, just concrete roads and road bikes, like yawn. Kind of boring. So I was like, guys, not this year. Maybe in the future I will. But yeah, there's so much cool stuff to do in life that you have to continue to raise the bar, I think, not keep doing the same thing over and over, which is what I don't want to do.
Totally go and do the Comrades in South Africa. I did it. It's awesome. Yeah, it's totally what you'd love. Yeah. Just the
what is that, Flicka?
Comrades is the ultimate human challenge, they call it. It's the ultra marathon from Pietermaritzburg to Durban. You can do the down run or the up run, and it's just unbelievable. It's 89 kilometers, so yeah. And so you run through a valley of 1,000 hills, and you know, the cock crows, it starts the race, it's 15,000 people, and it's just like the for South Africans, ultra running's like the ultimate. You're God if you do it over there. And like, you drive the course the day before, and every family has marked an area where they're going to stand on the course. Yeah, and it's just spectators the whole way. Yeah, I had to qualify at 100 miler in Australia, but I think you can just sign up. I'm not sure. But yeah, and the girls or the kids make beads, and they give it to one runner for good luck. And so like, you run along and someone looks at you, one of the little kids, and and they just give you these little good luck beads, and like, so much stuff that's just amazing. Yeah, you'd love it. Yeah, I do. I did the down run. I want to go back and do the up run. But yeah, you're running to a stadium, 80,000 people at the end at Durban. It's just awesome. But the spectacular views and everything, but right up your alley. You'd love it.
I'll add it to my list.
Yeah, do it.
Since we've heard from you, Flicka, kind of just give your, I don't think you've ever been on the podcast. Introduce yourself and kind of tell us your background, where you live, and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm known as Flick. On the Timex team from Australia, if you can't tell. And I started off with in endurance sports with ultra running. I used to run the 100 milers, and the 100 mile track was my race. I won the Australian 100 mile track championships, and then I went over and raced in South Africa doing some ultra running and stuff. And then I came to America and to coach triathlon over here, and got on the multi-sport team, started to ride a bike, learned to swim, and then took up triathlon. And then my second Ironman, I qualified for Kona, and then I've just fell in love with it and continued on through there. Had a few injuries over the last few years, so been working hard to work through them and get back on the racing path. But I live in Marin in the Bay Area and coach triathlon there, and also work as a personal assistant for Dwell magazine. Dwell magazine, it's like interior design. So that's pretty cool, keeps me busy. And I was gonna be here for 6 months, and now I'm here for it's my seventh year now. So just met good people, found good things to do, and triathlon really opened me up to lots of people over here. So I think that's why I'm still here. It's great.
Oh, another question from the audience. This is, I'm sorry, you're second. Hold on, we've talked to you already.
Flick, are you still working at Shift? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, I work at Shift. It's a cycling studio in San Francisco with other coaches like Matt Dixon and Craig and Chris Houth, some really top triathlon coaches. It's been really great to feed off them and get different coaching styles to learn from. And it's a big part of my work is coaching at that studio. We have pros like Meredith Kessler, Sarah Piembo, we had Laura Siddell. All those guys train at our studio, so it's definitely a performance-based quality cycling studio, which is really great to be around that quality. And everyday people get to train next to pros. It's pretty cool.
Another question from Emily. Emily, go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. Just wanted a little more insight on, not insight, but how is your injury journey going and how do you mentally get through that? Because obviously you're very talented and I'm sure that's tough.
Yeah, I mean, not kind of my first rodeo at this, but which makes it a little tough. And I think the hard part is I really like to work really hard. So just trying to find a balance mentally. And I think what's helped me over the past is really not to focus on what you used to do and where you used to be, and just like try and be better than yesterday, you know? So, because when you start to think back of what you used to be able to do and have a look at where you are now, it can be a little bit discouraging. Whereas if you're like, oh, that was so much better than last week, then it's kind of more motivating. And I think it's always to have goals. Like, you know, I've already set that I want to race certain races this year. I want to race Santa Rosa Ironman again this year. And so I think having goals keeps you working towards getting there rather than just thinking you're just doing this for some reason. But, you know, but it gets... I definitely think it's just support surrounding yourself with people that are pretty supportive. And I think that really helps. Like you guys in the super that have squished me up the back with the bags. Yeah super
that's
supportive.
You know, people when they die in car accidents, sometimes they go through the windshield.
Yeah.
You're like the farthest back, so
yeah,
you're
I
good.
Know.
We're protecting you.
Yeah.
The silver lining. There you go.
The silver lining. I'm thankful for you guys. Yeah.
Flick, one more question from the audience in a second. You were an endurance runner before you made the Timex team,
yeah.
And then you discovered triathlon.
Oh, sorry. No, I discovered triathlon. The year before, and that's when I qualified for Kona, and then Tristan picked me up at Kona in 2012. But before that, yeah, I was just a runner, and when I moved to America, my friend taught me how to ride a bike. We started with joggers and pedals with cages, and then I got a speedo, and then I just started trying to get faster and faster, and now it's kind of one of my strengths. So it all started when I moved over here. Like,
what's a speedo?
Like a computer, bike computer.
Oh, I thought that.
And then that encouraged me to get better on the bike, and it actually was my worst leg, and now it's like one of my strongest, and I coach it as well. So I don't like being bad at things, so it's just kind of motivating to get going on that. But yeah, and then I got into the multi-sport team, and it just went from there.
Caitlin, got a question?
Not so much a question, just a comment in regards to that little thing, logo, slogan that Flick uses when she always says, you know, you got to focus on where you are now, don't focus on where you were. She really helped me out with that last year. We were just both having bad days. She gave me a call and told me that, and it has just stuck with me and resonated with me for, probably about 6 months ago now. And, I just think she's super encouraging, and she just has that such a great mentality to everything that she's been through, and I just love that. How do you say it, Flick? Don't focus on where you were. Focus on where you are.
Where you want to be. Yeah, I think through all my injuries, at first it was really hard because used to before they started performing well to be inspiring, but then you find out there's other ways than just winning to help other people, you know, out in the triathlon world. So so that kind of became a thing to try and stay positive through the injuries. And you don't know how many people I actually got more emails from people when I was coming back from my hip fracture than when I won my Ironman, that they'd watched my progress and it helped them get through their injury than when I actually won the Ironman. Everyone's like, oh, awesome, but I actually got more emails and stuff from people watching my recovery online that it's helped them to keep going through their niggles because I was doing so much. I was always at PT, I was at the pool, I was doing what I could do, not what I couldn't do, and it helped them, you know, not just, you know, get depressed about their injuries. They got out and did what they could to get back faster. So so that was kind of encouraging through the journey as well.
Does your journey ever see yourself as a professional, or were you a professional before this?
No, I just did ultra running. I won the Australian 100 mile championships but I was super young. It was a whole older field, and then I played touch football for Australia and volleyball as well. I played touch football for Australia.
Dude,
yeah.
I played flag football, powder puff. That's what it's called in America, like in high school. And I was a quarterback, and I'm undefeated, FYI.
Dude, we're having a showdown at camp.
No, we could be on the same team.
Let's go play powder puff / touch football.
Okay, well, it's going to be Aussie / US. No, it's touch football. We played beach touch too and beach volleyball, so it's a little bit different, but it's a whole thing in Australia. It's a real
thing. Wait a minute, football in Australia is soccer.
No, this is touch football.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We still call soccer, but yeah, no, it's a thing, but yeah, I was very much a team sport player until then, but no, at the moment my goal is just to get back racing strong and then we'll see what happens from there.
Only other former pro in the car right now is Roger, who decided that he wasn't good enough anymore, so he went to become an age grouper. So, Caitlin.
Was Roger pro?
Yeah, he was for a couple of years.
Then he
quit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
I know, big quitter. Right. Yeah. No, I think it was just too demanding.
Oh, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Come on.
A few races, don't quit.
Now he just wants to be a first age grouper. He's kind of just selfish that way.
That guy.
So, Caitlin, last year was your rookie year on the Timex team, because I remember doing our little side poolside interview.
Yes.
So, can you recap what your first year has been like wearing the brand and racing under the Timex umbrella?
Yeah, I get a lot more high fives. And it is crazy. It's a really, really cool camaraderie, especially with how much the factory team has been growing.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, you're the white jersey. Like, you're really cool.
You're like major league and they're like a farm team.
I mean, you don't want to think of it that way, but lots of high fives. I took the second half of the season off from racing and focused on business a little bit more. And that allowed me to go to, I went to Ironman Maryland, watched a couple athletes. I went to Louisville. And I always.
What's the name of the city?
I'm in Louisville.
Louisville or Louisville?
Well, it's Louisville, but however you're supposed to say it, one less syllable. So it was cool seeing, you know, because when I was in Kentucky, everybody else was in Kona. But there were a lot of the factory kits there, and, you know, they would just run off course just to give you a high five.
That's
so
awesome.
It's really, it's a good kind of sense of pride to have with wearing the Timex colors.
Were you wearing other colors, or you were sponsored before this? Is this your first sponsored multi-sport team?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That transition, do you feel like you walk a little taller as a member of this elite team? I mean, this is a very special club, 50 members from around the globe, and people either get recruited or they apply, and they apply, but they never get on it, and here you are.
Yeah, you know what Tristan told me when he and I had a phone conversation? We met in Kona in 2015, and we had a phone conversation shortly after Sam told me to apply for the team. And he said the coolest thing to me that has stuck with me, and it's definitely molded me into the brand ambassador I want to be for Timex. He said, "I'm sure you're a good athlete, but you seem like a good person." And I thought that was the coolest thing, because I remember last year when I came to Timex camp and I'm just like a little intimidated because you're around all these like super athletes, and just by the end of the sessions, I realized I was with a lot of really good people. And I think that there's such a push for, you know, team camps and sponsorships that are really ambassadorships. And I think that we're really lucky with Timex because we get to represent such a brand, and it's so different from those bigger ambassadorships that you see out there. I definitely take a lot of pride with Timex.
Roger and I have talked about this a number of times, about becoming a sponsored athlete, what that means, and people's motives. We talked about it 1,000 times. And what would you tell an athlete who's interested in joining a team, not Timex, could be Timex, but any other team, what is it they need to do to make themselves more attractive? What do they need to bring to the table besides results? I guess some athletes are result driven, and that's why they're on the team. but not everyone is about right. results. What would you say to someone out there?
I think just finding where your strengths are. For me personally, it certainly wasn't about results, but I like to be involved in my community and what I do with both my profession as a physical therapist, and I own a coaching business as well. Just being able to be a good ambassador for that and like find what you want to represent and how you want to represent it, I think is the most important thing. So many times, like you said, you and Roger have talked about it a lot, you see people who just want to be a part of something. Yeah. And you just want to be a part of a team, whether it has, like we got 50 folks or whether there's 500, they don't care, they just want to be a part of something. And I think with Timex, you know, you get extremely fortunate because you're part of something so cool and so, you know, it's what, the longest running multi-sport team in triathlon.
On that note, I think Tristan has done an awesome job in selecting the Timex team. Like, I don't know how he does it, but he seems to pick a unique a bunch of people that are big in the community, you know, very positive and very supportive of each other, as well as amazing athletes. So I always brag about the team to everyone else because it just seems like a really unique group of people. And Tristan, I don't know how Tristan does it, but he seems to pick a good group. Yeah.
Roger. Oh, Roger's talking to the Uber driver. When we talk about sponsored athletes, what is the thing that all people always ask you about? Oh, I want to be on the Timex team because
they beat someone, because they had a result, because they're faster than, is typically always the statement. And I think our team in particular, I always look at it as a kind of like a pizza or a giant pie, and there are parts to that pie that we all contribute to, whether it's, you know, our reach, our involvement, our history, results, whatever it is, but rarely does anybody have all those parts. So I think that's what makes a team really unique, is that everybody plays a piece in that bigger wheel of spokes.
I think it's what Flick was saying, is that you pick this group of people that represent different parts of the community, different parts of the world. So we have an international team, and we all have a reach and something we bring to the table. Some people are, you know, big on social media, some people are results, some people are coaches, and so on. So there you go. And you have to be probably a good representation in your community, like you're saying, with you wear the colors and people look to you, and you are an example every time you walk around with that brand on you. You get questions like that?
Yeah, mostly, hey, where'd you get that shirt? I was running a race the other day, and it was like a turnaround, and the volunteer said, I really like your shirt.
Yeah.
And I just said, thank you.
Flick,
yo.
Tell me about the San Francisco triathlon community and your relationship with Meredith, because Meredith has been on our show the most, the most visits as a guest on our show. Our most favorite guest, probably second to Emily. Yes.
Yeah, second to Emily.
Tell me about the triathlon community in San Fran and you and Meredith.
Well, we've got a very strong triathlon community. There, actually met Meredith when I first moved over here, and she actually was just turning pro. She kind of took me under a wing, as I sort of knew no one when I come over to America, and I met her, and she's just been so supportive and like a big sister, really. We trained together. She's moved out to Marin, and she lives literally 5 minutes away, but also, just on a personal note, like, she's just been like a big sister actually over here, and she's so supportive to the community and everyone else in Marin, San Francisco area. There's a lot of great athletes out there. The Everyman Jack, top amateur male teams out there. So they train at our studio as well, and they push each other. And you can see from their results that that's a huge advantage of that to them, to train with each other. Meredith, you know, has been at the top. She just keeps getting better and better, and you know, just to watch her work ethic, like, I can't even describe it. She's just like a workhorse, and every day, just day in, day out, yet she still has the time to reply to every single email, every single Facebook post, every single Go Meredith, and so she just come out with her book as well. But it's just awesome to see her work and how she, you know, her business as a triathlete is amazing. But yeah, she's always been so supportive, and actually, you know, she was on my bed the day after I was in my bike crash, like, and kind of, you know, helped me through the mental side of all that as well. So through highs and lows, you know, Meredith's pretty genuine in you don't have to be winning or a superstar to you know, for her to have your back, which makes her a pretty cool person as well. So she's very open to everyone, and you know, it doesn't matter who you are. So just an awesome person, and it's just so great to see her still out there competing so well. Like, you think she's, you know, maybe had her best and she just keeps coming back, but I think she still has that Kona to crack yet. So I think we'll keep seeing her perform well until that day. So she's a great asset to have along, and just pretty inspiring every day.
Yeah, we saw her finish second in New Zealand.
Yep.
Hoping to go for that sixth peat, but
third actually.
Was that? She was third? Okay. So she had won that race five times in a row. I know one of those races was shortened, but doesn't matter. Still,
yeah,
Ironman.
Yeah.
She got that. What do you think is that? You just mentioned the Kona puzzle for her specifically, because she's been first on the run, or she's dominated the swim and the bike, and then something goes on. Is it? What do you think it is, and what does she think it is?
Yeah, you know, last year I think she thought she was the most prepared she's ever been. She'd had some trouble with the salt water or the water, and you know, things had just not gone right. She'd had felt like she had no power on the bike and whatnot, yet she'd won every other race in the year, and she just felt like she was in top shape. So she's played around a little bit, I think, with an Australian company, also with her nutrition, and in the heat, because she typically is more a cooler weather kind of gal. But see if that can then help, that see her have the energy, because it's not the fitness. I mean, she can win Ironmans. What, six? She just did her 60th Ironman. So, and with a number of those, she's won. So it's not that. It's just something about that Kona, and I don't know if it's just, you know, when you have a good race somewhere, it's kind of confidence booster, right? So you know, that must be a thing in the back of your head every time you go there. If you've had a race that hasn't gone your way, I'm sure that plays on your mind a little bit. But she's always gone into it 120% ready. It's just I think maybe a little bit less racing and maybe more focus on Kona might be in the future, but we'll see.
Does Kona, do women need to win Kona to define themselves? If you look on Meredith's career, her resume is, you know, littered with Ironman victories. Do you think she needs that for some kind of validation?
Definitely not, and that's what we keep telling her. I mean, her community and basically the triathlon community already. That's the thing with Meredith. She doesn't have to win. She doesn't have to win any race, because she's already proved herself as such a champion. And I think the way she represents herself as an athlete also puts her at world class. And I think she's shown that she can win, and all her races are against top fields. She never hardly does any of the races that, you know, the fields aren't that strong in. She always does the hard, strong fields. So she's proved that she can beat the best. I don't think she needs to. I think maybe she thinks she might want to do that, and she might need to do that. But I think to everyone else, she doesn't need to at all. I mean, how many top triathletes have won, I mean, have raced 60 Ironmans, like, and placed most of them, you know? So in the 70.3s as well. So she's always on that podium, but yeah, I don't know. Kona's just one she still wants to crack, I think, more personally than have to for everyone else. I think everyone already holds her pretty much as one of the top triathletes. So
everybody except me and the Uber driver have raced in Kona, I think. Unless you've raced Kona? No? No? Okay. So is there a Kona formula for you, Emily?
No.
To be successful in Kona?
Well, the last time I did it was a few years ago. I'm trying to think if, I think it's just not, it's different for everybody, right? So for some people it's going to be mental, for some people it's going to be physical, for some people it's not going to be preparing, right? I think if you prepare the best you can and you have a bad day, sometimes that's just the luck of the draw. Mm-hmm. you can only control what you can control, right? So the things that happen that you have no control over, you just got to go with. And for me, it's all about just preparation and doing the best I can with what I got. And if you got it, great. And if you don't, you know, there's always another race.
Caitlin?
Yeah, just you can't have any expectations. You can't go into Kona and think, all right, well, today I'm going to bike under 5 hours, because that island can throw anything at you. And I remember, I don't remember where I heard it, but before I did Kona in 2015, I read, like, you can't go to Kona and expect anything, because literally anything can happen on that date. And it's true. That island is just, it's crazy.
Roger, can I interrupt you? The you've been to Kona 5 or 6 or 10 times. What is it about Kona that makes it so challenging for athletes to? I mean, we saw that with McCormick years ago, of like how to figure this thing out, and you go in thinking, oh, I can do this, but then you go, I have no idea.
I think it was said. It basically, in my opinion, it is your first year there. You go in there, and nowadays, in order to get there, most people are placing the top three, if not winning their qualifying race. So it's making it a pretty stacked and fast race now, more so even than in the past. But I think everyone has these grand dreams of their first time there, that they're gonna, you know, potentially win this darn thing. And then they're pretty humbled, not only by the other athletes there, but the conditions. And then they, you know, kind of get up and, you know, brush the dust and sweat off and go at it probably for at least another year, wanting to kind of redeem themselves. But it's a different day, it's a different course, a different vibe. Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard every single year, and I think that's what brings me back, is I just still don't think I personally have had my best race there. There's so many other things to manage there. So I mean, for me, that's the piece, is I'm never racing against people there. I'm racing against myself there, just because I think I've raced Iron, of all the Ironmans I've done, that's the one I've raced the most, is actually Kona.
Same
yeah,
course most.
Yeah, yeah, and it's always the same one, so it's kind of cool, other than the swim course change this year, so.
He's a living legend, Emily. And I know you look up to him because he's a foot taller than you, but what is it about Raj that makes him so awesome?
Like, it's just this whole, like, aura and cloud around him, almost, of sheer crazy awesomeness. And the people that come up to him, wherever we are, like at the airport, do you see all the paparazzi?
Oh, yeah, they want to see.
Trailing this guy?
Yeah, where's the next terminal?
Right?
Because he's so tall.
And his big sunglasses and little bag with a little dog in it. Like a pure celebrity. Yeah.
You know, this might conclude our Uber drive to our hotel.
This is amazing, Dave. Thanks for pulling it together.
You're welcome, guys. Thank you for humoring me and talking to me. And Flick, thank you for talking over my shoulder and me giving the microphone over my shoulder. And so this is going to be probably its own little podcast, and hopefully we'll do more with other athletes. Oh yeah, look at that.
We got that going for us.
So we got that. All right, that's going to wrap this up. Peace in and peace out. Thank you for listening, everybody. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Life's begun, nights are warm and the days are young.